This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Bart Edmonston Jr., one of the friends on Horn Island with Nolan Wells on July 4th, just retained attorney Russell Latino, who says Edmonston fully cooperated with investigators, turned over his boat, GPS, and phone, and flatly denies any involvement in Nolan Wells' death. A lot of people online who have already decided what happened here have been naming names and have been accusing him of being involved in the death of his friend and the murder of his friend is what some are claiming. Latino announced the family is filing defamation lawsuits. We knew this would happen, and I applaud it. They've hired a PI firm to track social media users and says a credible death threat brought in by the FBI has also has been brought to the FBI, so they're aware of it. The question nobody's asking is whether this legal offensive would even exist if the investigation had given the public a single answer in those 25 days. Latino comes out swinging categorical denial of any sort of involvement here. Voluntary cooperation on the part of Nolan's friend, the boat and the GPS phone all turned over. The PI firm hired, nationwide defamation lawsuits announced. That's not a guy playing defense. He's running offense at this point. Isn't this about establishing that Edmonston has cleared in the court of public opinion before a grand jury gets to weigh in? Is that what this is about? To clear his name with the ether, with the internet, before that all gets underway? What's your take on this? Of filing these suits, we haven't seen them filed yet, but the threats are there. And what do you think the odds are of succeeding? There's been a lot of vile commentary on this about people who were very, very close to Nolan. And if they had nothing to do with this, the last thing you'd probably want to do is file a lawsuit that would open yourself up to civil discovery and all sorts of things. If you have something to hide, it would come out. Why would you be filing a lawsuit if you didn't do anything?
Yeah, I think certainly filing a lawsuit or at least threatening to gives me some indication that this person is either making a tremendous bluff or they believe that they have nothing to hide. And that's kind of consistent with how this person has acted throughout the duration of the investigation. And in terms of the success of the lawsuits, hey, if you can show that a person has made a false statement and that it was a statement of fact, and that it was a statement to the public, and that it's caused you some kind of damages, including having to face death threats that you wouldn't have to face otherwise, then that seems to meet the elements of a defamation claim. Now, whether that claim is really collectible is another issue entirely, but perhaps it doesn't matter to this family whether it's collectible. Perhaps this is an assertion of, hey, putting myself out there and saying, not only did I have nothing to do with this, but I have been aggrieved by these falsehoods that have been spread about me. And I think that that certainly could influence the public narrative and could potentially influence the grand jury investigation.
Yeah, I mean, you don't typically see people who are guilty filing civil defamation lawsuits that would open up discovery and all that if they have something to hide, because that would backfire tremendously on them. If you're going to file that, I mean, either you're really grandstanding and hoping that nothing will happen, which does not appear to be what's happening here. It appears that there probably is absolutely nothing to hide. Not that I'm aware of, not in a lot of cases we've covered, not to say that this hasn't happened in the legal world, Eric. Have you seen any cases like this where people start firing off, defamation lawsuits? I guess we have seen one in the Koberger case. Someone was accusing a professor of being involved with the murder, and that they won tremendously, tremendous amount of money on that one. Are we going to start seeing more of this? And I guess at what point, how do you handle this from a legal standpoint? Because there's creators who get on their pulpit and preach to their masses what they believe, and then the masses seem to go along with it, no matter how off base it may be. And the masses then scatter and their flying monkeys say what they're going to say. And it just scatters out there. Do you go solely after the creators who are making these proclamations of guilt against people who are innocent and never been charged? I don't want to say innocent until proven guilty, never been charged, probably never will be charged with anything. Do you go after the people who are making the big claims, or do you go after all the monkeys as well? The whole circus goes down. How do you handle that from a legal standpoint? Because that's a lot of people, a lot of filing. I don't know how it all works on the back end.
Sure. It can be complicated and messy and unsatisfying and perilous at times. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the Alex Jones defamation case where, you know, he was this big influencer at a TV show stating that there was a school shooting. And in fact, it was essentially staged that there were like these actors involved or something. The families of the victims said, "What the F are you talking about?" And sued him and said, "Hey, this is BS." And they won. Well, those folks, in my understanding, have not seen any significant money. Alex Jones, I believe, has sought refuge in bankruptcy and has lost some of his assets. But if you cannot squeeze any compensation out of Alex Jones through that process, you know, how are you going to do that for a person who has 500 followers who's also talking mess about you? If it's not successful against somebody like Alex Jones, I think the likelihood of success against a different type of influencer is even lower. And so, you know, you want to protect your name and you want to assert your interests, but you also don't want to get into some quagmire that could be never ending and you have bankruptcy proceedings on the back end. And how effective really is that process?
Let me ask you your opinion on this, because you're right. We have seen this in several examples now. I just wasn't seeing that at the beginning. We have seen this run out and run into play, and it hasn't worked well for creators who've made dramatic assertions accusing innocent people of crimes. Has that deterred anything, in your opinion? Do you think we're seeing less of that now because people like Alex Jones have gone down? Because I don't remember who it was. It was some, I don't know, unpopular podcast or whatever that went after the teacher in Idaho and the Koberger case. They saw quite a big repercussion for a very small channel. Has this slowed anybody down from going in those lanes, in your opinion, or is there even more of them now?
If anything, at least in my lay appraisal, there's been an uptick in that kind of stuff. Even since the Alex Jones verdict came down, he lost InfoWars. He lost he lost a lot. You know, you'd think that might deter someone who's trying to build a brand, trying to build a platform, trying to build something to say, oh, maybe I should be a little more cautious. But at least in the content that I've seen, that sort of cautious, reserved, circumscribed type of content, that's not what's going to get them to the place that they want to be for some of these folks. And for some of these folks, that they want to be bombastic. They're going to take risks. They're going to say things that are inflammatory. And I don't think that's had any deterrent effect on those kinds of platforms.
Yeah, it really doesn't feel like it has had a huge effect on a lot of those platforms as far as where people are going and what they'll say or not say. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, it's true for anything out there that we talk about, or crimes that are committed. There's the death penalty. Does it necessarily slow down people committing murders? No. Consequences don't always have the actions that you want. But on principle, filing this, even if they know they're not going to collect, on principle, does filing this have any, does it make any influence on a grand jury investigation? Does it have any influence on any sort of criminal investigation when you have the people that would in theory be accused, or at least that the internet is already accusing, coming out and saying, "You're coming at me, I'm coming at you"? Does that slow down anything in terms of criminal proceeding, or do they just know there's not going to be any sort of criminal proceeding? Even if they were to come at them for anything, We got nothing to hide. We're already telling you. Here's everything we got. Dig all you want. You will find nothing. Does this influence anything in those areas? Because that's where the conspiracy camp is going to go. They're going to say they're doing that for this reason. What would you say to that?
I would say that it's going to have less of an impact on authorities and on law enforcement, but the potential impact on a grand jury, I think, is significant. Because, you know, I put myself in that position. Let's say I'm not a lawyer and I'm just on a grand jury and we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to see if anyone might have any sort of criminal responsibility. And you hear about one potential option, and this person has gone to great lengths to, you know, file in a court a lawsuit of defamation saying, hey, any accusations against me regarding this incident are false, and they're so false, in fact, that I'm going to use the legal process to protect myself and to hold accountable those folks who are making those false allegations. If I hear something like that and I'm on a grand jury, it doesn't make me think it's more likely that person did it. If anything, it has the opposite effect. And when we're talking about a number of potential players who could be investigated regarding their possible responsibility, that person doesn't seem very high on the list to be charged to me.
Yeah. What about, obviously, if they're going to file lawsuits against people who are making these sort of claims, you know, I say more power to them. Because we don't have facts, and we've been saying it from the beginning, we just don't know the answers, so you can't go down those sort of roads. But you do have people, Crump, who has, for there is no other way around it, he's tweeted out false information. He's tweeted out pictures that weren't what he said he thought they were or portrayed them to be as fact. A pool party that took place prior to the incident. See, he made it off the island. No, he didn't make it off the island. This is from days ago. It's been proven. There's been a lot of things that have been tweeted out that have basically angered the mob, angered lots of people, and incited a lot of people to believe a narrative that is not factual, that no one can say they know the answer to. And he seems to be the head of it. He's representing the family right now. And it just seems to be moment after moment that there's some sort of insinuation going on that the people who were closest to Nolan had some sort of criminal responsibility in his death. I don't know if there's any other way of reading that. We talked about this a little bit last week. Can they file a lawsuit against him? I mean, not just the creators who are talking about it, but let's go right down to the very people, the people that some of these creators are looking at as the source of some of this information. If you're hearing it from the family's attorney, and you believe the family's attorney and you're going down that road and you're reporting what the family's attorney is saying, why not go after the family's attorney and not necessarily the people who are just repeating the information from the family's attorney?
Look, Tony, attorneys have a heightened duty to be truthful and accurate, especially when it comes to public statements being made about cases. This isn't an accountant talking. This isn't someone in some other, you know, a waiter or something discussing what they feel about a case. And that heightened duty is there for a reason. In fact, it's an ethical duty, such that we cannot mislead the public. We cannot engage in false representations, including in things that don't necessarily involve legal cases. So that heightened duty, there is responsibility there. And if you violate that duty, I think you are really putting yourself at risk. As an attorney, I am so horribly careful about what I say in terms, especially in terms of my case, but in terms of anything. And when you begin to get a little reckless, perhaps you get worked up, perhaps you get involved in the fervor, perhaps you got a family who is grieving and they're coming to you every day. What is the answer? Tell us, please. And you're trying to move the ball forward. I understand all that, but you cannot do so in a reckless fashion. You cannot do so in a fashion that injects falsehoods into the public narrative that then causes damages for other people. And if you do that, I think there is the possibility of civil liability for you.
What about being disbarred? I mean, I'm thinking of the photo that he tweeted out of the pool party, which was easily disproven as being not what it was portrayed as. I mean, That's falsehoods. That's just bullshit. I mean, I'm all about find the truth. And certainly Mississippi has a history of shit to look into. But this seems to possibly be the generation and group of kids who said, you know what, we're not playing by those rules anymore. We don't deal with that. We're a very diverse group of friends, and none of that is who we are. And then you have that sort of shit being turned around and thrown out there online as if it is something. It's not like Crump has necessarily named the friends specifically as being the murderers, but it's pretty much walked right up to the line of it with what's been insinuated, in my opinion. Obviously, that's not responsible. That is horrendous behavior, in my opinion, from anyone, no matter what side you're on looking at this. And there shouldn't be sides other than trying to find the damn truth. Has he gone too far in this case? A lot of people are looking at this going, this guy is really pushing the envelope a bit much. Where is the bar? I mean, where is the limit as to how far this guy can push? It's not his first rodeo doing this shit either. He's not Saul Goodman at the end of the mini mall that has no clue what the fuck he's doing when it comes to something like this. He's experienced. He seems to know how far he can push the bar. Has he pushed it too far this round? And can there be repercussions? And where would they come from? Especially if there's no criminal action here. Who files the issues with the Bar Association that says this guy's really, you know, this is not okay?
When it comes to potential attorney misconduct, every state has a regulatory body to which complaints can be filed. And those complaints can be filed by anyone. And if the complaint appears on its face to have reasonable grounds of being justified, and that regulatory body can start an investigation. And when it comes to that line, Tony, usually a lot of times what the state bar is looking at is the difference between carelessness and deliberate deception. Certainly, if there was deliberate deception that was proven, that could result in suspension, if not revocation of someone's license to practice law. Proven, that's pretty tough. It would be pretty hard because when you look at some inaccurate information that's been presented by an attorney, and that attorney is like, "Hey, I had a bunch of cases. I was busy. I accidentally tweeted this." There are so many excuses that they can give that are different than deliberate deception. But a cumulative effect of ongoing carelessness, ongoing negligence in terms of being inaccurate to the public about legal cases that you're handling, I think the bar would look at that in a very concerning fashion.
Is there ever anybody, I mean, I don't know how this works, but like, is there ever like anything in the regulatory agencies for attorneys when they see behavior like this going on, where somebody reaches out and says, "Hey, you're kind of getting close to crossing a line. Somebody already said you have." Or is it just like, "Nope, here's the consequences. We've determined you've crossed the line." Is there ever the friendly like warning that comes up? "Hey, you might want to dial it back a bit because we don't want to have to go down this road with you." Or is that non-existent?
I've never seen where like an Office of Attorney Regulation gives a warning to somebody and says, "Hey, let me give you a call, bro.
Just time so out.
You
know, yeah.
We're getting close to that line, dude. You better cool out." I've never seen that. And in fact, the opposite in Colorado, where I primarily practice, the opposite can happen. There's an ethical duty for all lawyers that if you become aware of some knowing ethical violation from some other attorney, technically you're duty bound to report that to attorney regulation. And so there can actually be the opposite where nobody's giving you a warning. And in fact, other folks are ethically obligated to tell the body about your alleged misconduct.
Are there any incentives for anybody around an attorney that might be acting like this to report to the regulatory agency? Or is that like a blacklist type sentence where it's like, "I'm going to report you, but then, good luck me getting a job anywhere else or with any other firm.
That's really the concern, Tony, is that Ben Crump and his stature, especially within his practice area, it's nationwide. He's a tremendous deal. And so, you know, could, you know, Johnny Law student or somebody who just graduated or whatever, want to report on that person, knowing the consequences professionally that they might face and also the lawfare that they might be subjected to, even if they're correct and even if they're not doing anything wrong. Yeah. I think there's truly a disincentive to report that kind of misconduct. Might be an incentive on behalf of Crump's team, his company, his other attorneys who work with them, to go to him in private and say, hey, dude, if you get suspended, this company is going to have a tremendous problem because you can't practice law anymore for a period of time. So in order for the viability of the firm to remain, let's be a little more measured on how we're handling this.
From a professional standpoint, do you feel like he's wading into those waters, or is that just me giving the conjecture of a layperson out here going, this seems a bit much?
You know, I look at it in comparison to other cases. So Tony Busby is this attorney who represented a lot of the alleged victims in the Diddy case. And, you know, I think there was more than 100 of those people who came forward. Just statistically, are all of those cases meritorious? Statistically, that would tell us probably not. And he has made some reaches and some leaps and some unsupported inferences in the eyes of some. And that dude's still practicing. And so I'm not sure where that line would rest on this type of behavior. I don't know how close he's getting. And if it's never reported and the regulation body never looks into it, we're never going to know exactly where that line is. We have guidance in terms of what the ethical rules are. But where that line really falls in this context, I think, is a bit unclear.
Is this a story that goes beyond the Nolan Wells case here, but is this an area, and we're just talking conjecture here, of a place where there should be more restrictions? Maybe there should be more more repercussions. Maybe it's an area where there's guidelines, there's suggestions. We've learned in our world, there's all sorts of guidelines and suggestions. There's just not always repercussions if people choose not to follow them, or not very convincing repercussions that someone says, yeah, I can deal with that repercussion. It's not going to, the payoff over here is greater than what that repercussion will be. Does there need to be greater repercussions in this area of law for attorneys that go really too far? Do we have too many out there that are going too far because they know they can, because there really isn't any, there's never going to be enough pushback, and Joe Public talking about it doesn't really mean jack shit to them? Should there be more like that? I mean, obviously there's a yin and a yang to all this, and if you have that, you know, you have it in other places too, so it would have to be applied across the board, not just to cases you agree with specifically. What's your thoughts there? Are the rules too loose and fast, if you will?
You know, perhaps I'm a bit biased because I am an attorney and bring cases to the media and I do talk about
them. Sure.
But, you know, on the one hand, we want to ensure ethical, responsible conduct by lawyers, that they're not being reckless with their statements, especially in a way that could be causing harm to other people and impairment of certain investigations. On the other hand, there is free speech. A person's allowed to have an opinion. That's different than stating a fact. If a person, if an attorney is stating an opinion about something, that's a little more protected. And gosh, if we go to grand jury proceedings and someone is ultimately charged and that finding is consistent in part with what Crump has been saying, that then I think a lot of folks would be like, oh, hey, we should let these folks pop off. We should let them push the envelope. We should let them be suggestive, because sometimes it leads to a greater truth. And of course, that end would be in hindsight. And that would justify it under those circumstances. But if no one is charged in the grand jury proceeding, then it just appears to be recklessness. And I'm not sure. I think we got to be careful about circumscribing the speech of anybody. But we also can't just let lawlessness abound and people get hurt too. I don't have a good answer for you.
No, no. I mean, I respect that. It's always fascinating to see what's going on, you know, behind the curtain and to get your insight into it. Fascinating conversation today. As always, thank you so much, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, for being with us and giving us your insight on where these cases stand right now. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you don't miss any of our conversations. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, for Eric, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.